25-2784 CV, International Union et al. Versus Ford Motor Company.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Mr. Hayes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why don't we just let everybody shuffle out of the courtroom so we don't hear anybody slamming doors? Don't want to miss anything. I understand, sir, you'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Once we get everybody settled. Okay. I think it's ready. So whenever you'd like to proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Ian Hayes for Appellant United Auto Workers. This case turns on whether there is a material factual difference between the issue arbitrator Glazer decided in 2022 and the one Ford now claims is a new issue, namely that Mr. Suzik lied during the investigation that led to his termination and what effect that should have. The union's position is there is no material factual difference between those two things. Ford presented the issue of Suzik lying to the arbitrator during the arbitration hearing by eliciting testimony on that fact.
The issue of lying certainly came up the first time, but lying or dishonesty was not a basis for the termination back then, right?
I would not agree with that, Your Honor. First of all, Ford relied on the lying heavily in its argument to the arbitrator, both on the issue of
but
just cause.
But the dismissal was not based on lying.
Sorry. Yes, Your Honor. The original dismissal was for harassment. However,
and that proceeding was based on whether there was a just reason to dismiss him, which was based on the harassment, not on dishonesty.
Well, Your Honor, the issue is those are two different things in a meaningful way. Yes, the original termination was for harassment. That's what triggered the process, triggered the investigation in which he lied and led to the termination hearing. However, there was evidence presented as part of the holistic just cause analysis, which we go into in our papers, includes many different dimensions of the process surrounding a termination, including whether the person lied during an investigation. That's why it was appropriate for Ford to make arguments about the lying and for the arbitrator to, in black and white, refer to the lying, both with respect to whether there was just cause for termination and what the appropriate penalty was for Mr. Suzik.
Does it make sense to send it back to the arbitrator to let the arbitrator decide whether the extent to which dishonesty was a factor in his ruling?
Actually, Your Honor, both sides have agreed that the answer to that is no. The district court did ask that question and we briefed it. The union's position is that this case is already resolved, so there's nothing for that arbitrator to do. That's the main...
Why would that be? I mean, let me suggest there are two issues here. Whether or not he should be fired, what the penalty should be for his misconduct. If I understand your adversary's position, it's that the first arbitration only discussed whether he should be fired for the harassment, and that to the extent the lying, the admission of lying played in at all, it played in the penalty. So now they're arguing, well, he could also be fired for the lying in the course of the investigation that the arbitrator never considered. And whether or not he can be fired on that ground, not just the harassment ground, is something that has yet to be arbitrated. Why is that not a correct way to view this?
Because, Your Honor, the arbitrator did consider it both with respect to both issues.
Yeah, show me or help me understand how he considered it with respect to whether it was appropriate to fire him.
There's a key paragraph in the arbitrator's discussion section. I can find the site. Give me a moment. It's at A90. Where?
I'm sorry, A?
A90, 90.
99?
90.
Thank you.
And both sides rely on this for our arguments. We both think we're right about what it means. But the arbitrator says that I can read it. Disparate treatment requires that the discharge penalty be modified. However, because of the serious nature of the harassment that Mr. Sussek inflicted on his co-employees, that the harm for them was created, back pay and benefits would not be appropriate. This is the piece.
Let me be sure I'm with you on the right page. A-90-9-0, the whole page is entitled, "What Should Be the Remedy?" And is that the page you're reading from?
I may have the site wrong. I'm reading from my notes, Your Honor.
Okay.
But maybe
when you're up on rebuttal, you'll tell
yes,
us the page, okay?
The key point, though, Your Honor, is that in the arbitrator's discussion section, he had a sentence, Mr. Sussek was also untruthful during the investigation. Mm-hmm. That's in the middle of the arbitrator talking about just cause and the appropriate penalty for Mr.
Sussek. I just
Sussek.
Want to see the page where you're saying that. No, that is
A90.
It's A90. A90 is all about what getting to what remedy he thinks should happen for the harassment. And so this is viewed as a factor that is why he thought it couldn't get as beneficial or a remedy as your client wanted.
We would submit, Your Honor, the arbitrator is talking about both issues, which are, of course, related issues. Furthermore, the arbitrator, there's no dispute that the arbitrator talked about the issue of lying in his analysis of disparate treatment between, you know, comparing Mr. Sussek and another employee who also lied during an investigation, but who wasn't fired. So that disparate treatment analysis is what you might call a subset of just cause analysis or the merits analysis. The arbitrator engaged in that, meaning that the arbitrator, in his decision and based on Ford's arguments, referred to the lying with respect to both just cause and the penalty. Therefore, there is no material factual difference between what Ford raises now and what the arbitrator decided.
Can I just ask, is what you said the material factual difference? I was not under the impression that that's the full standard, that that's the core of it. But I thought we had decided the First Circuit saying it has to, whether it's beyond argument that there's no material factual difference. So sort of, is it arguable that there's a material factual difference? And I thought if that's the standard, that gives a broader scope to the things that can be then subsequently arbitrated. So in other words, if we can argue all day about this, and it's at least plausible that there's no clear material difference, right? Somebody can say, well, no, I think that this factored completely into the discharge. This was a basis for discharge. And other people say, no, I don't know. When you read the arbitrator, it could be read the other way. That leads to the answer of, yeah, kick it to arbitration the second time around.
I take your point, Your Honor. We would submit when it's in there as clearly as it is in the arbitrator's decision in black and white, that there is no real argument to be made.
So you would at least agree with my formulation of the standard, and you would argue then that the standard is met.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that's a direct quote from the International Chemical Workers case. So I didn't mean to hide the ball on that. What I'm zooming in on is the need for a material factual difference between these two things. And that's why both sides are arguing their side, whether arbitrator Glazer actually considered the lying in his decision. The union's position is that we are. I know I'm over my time.
Yeah, why don't we hear from your adversary?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And you've reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. We have Mr. Evanson.
Thank you,
you
Judge.
You may proceed.
And may it please the court. We obviously disagree with the union's description of the two discharges and the difference between them. We think this is a new termination based on new facts that need to be adjudicated through a new grievance procedure. But as Judge Nardini's question points out, that's not the question for this court. The question for this court, or the question for the one who determines arbitrability, is whether it is beyond argument that there is no material factual difference between the two disputes such that a fresh arbitration should be ordered. And the predicate question of who makes that decision. And that's really, under VRG Linhouse, that's the first question that the court asks, is who makes that decision? And the union agrees on page 4 of their reply brief that the CBA delegates the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator. And I'm happy to walk the court through the CBA and explain why that is the case, why the CBA does, in fact, delegate that question to the arbitrator. But it's admitted, and the court's case law comfortably...
What is the material factual difference?
The material factual difference is that in the first termination, specifically in the third stage grievance documents, which fix the issue, false statements, dishonesty, lying is not mentioned whatsoever. And, you know, counsel pointed to 8 words in a 34-page order. The court, or the arbitrator rather, could not have in that proceeding resolved the question whether lying during an investigation is sufficient to be just discharged for Ford, because it wasn't raised in those third stage grievance documents. And they have to be raised in the third stage grievance document. If you try and expand in the fourth stage beyond what the third stage document set, you get sent back to the second stage. So the arbitrator could not have decided whether a false statement was grounds for his termination in the fourth stage, because it was not raised whatsoever in the third stage grievance documents.
So could you just clarify procedurally the state of play? If we were to affirm across the board here, what happens next in terms of the whole arbitration process?
That's a good question, Your Honor. It would be in the union's court. They're the ones that initiate grievances. And so it would be what the district court held, which is that the award by its terms was confirmed, but that that award could not be enforced as to a second termination, the one that is currently in effect. So that would be the ruling, the judgment, as it were. And what the union does with that is...
And in your view, what could the union do under your view of the case? What could the union then do if they don't like this?
Well, I don't know, standing here, whether they could initiate a new grievance, what the company's defenses to a new grievance would be.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Procedurally speaking, not who would win or lose.
Okay.
But could, in your view, the union then bring another grievance before the arbitration folk and say, hey, this union member was improperly fired on the grounds that he would had lied during the investigation? Procedurally, is that something that they could do?
Procedurally, they could file a grievance. Now,
do you think that they can't file a grievance? Again, you may think that you would win it.
I don't think this has
would
been
you
briefed.
Assert procedural objection yeah. to them bringing another grievance?
So, I think that we would have real arguments that it's time barred, and I don't know how that would play out in the arbitration. Certainly, that is certainly a question for the arbitrator.
Would you
but
argue that it was somehow, I don't know, there was some sort of res judicata effect from the first arbitration? That that the first arbitrator already decided that? Because where I'm going with that is that would, if you were to make that argument, it would certainly seem to be contradicted by the argument you're making now, which is no, the first arbitrator didn't decide that. There's a difference. So it could be brought in a new arbitration. And that's why I'm curious. Are you saying that, yes, they could bring a new grievance, there'd be a new arbitration, you would win for any number of other reasons, but would you be interposing the objection, no, the first arbitrator already decided that he can get fired because he lied during the investigation?
I cannot imagine we would make that argument, Your Honor. We certainly would not make an argument in the grievance process, the arbitration process, that was inconsistent with what we have
raised. And that's
raised
not,
in
I guess
story.
I'm asking,
absolutely not.
Would you agree that if you were to make that argument in a future arbitration process, it would be inconsistent with the arguments you're making to us today?
Yeah, I assume so. I'm having a hard time picturing why we would make that argument, but certainly we would not in the arbitration take a position contrary to what we've taken in this court as to the scope and meaning of the first arbitration award. Now I do want to...
But you are preserving your rights to argue that it's untimely, that bringing a grievance now would be too late.
Certainly, I want to preserve that argument. I don't want to give up any defense in advance.
What does the agreement provide about how quickly a grievance has to be filed after a termination?
I believe it has to be filed within 3 days after the termination.
Okay.
And to be clear, in many of the other cases, I don't know why the union didn't do that here, but the union often files both a grievance and a district court action if they think that, you know, what they are doing can be enforced through the prior arbitration. That's what happened in several of the other cases. I don't know why the union didn't do that here, but that's this is not a sort of flaw in the system. It was the union's litigation choices not to do that. But these are all questions. These are all clearly questions about the interpretation and scope of the CBA and the powers of the arbitrator under the CBA. And so our position is that those get delegated to the arbitrator and that that's all this court needs to decide.
Just to be clear about the state of play in the district court, my understanding is that the district court has not ruled on the union's request to confirm the arbitration. Is that true?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe that the district judge granted the union's request to confirm the arbitration award, but refused to enforce that arbitration award as to the second termination. So as to the, you know, four, I think five things listed in the award itself that we had to, you know, we could give him a physical, that he couldn't retaliate, that he couldn't do this again. Those terms that are in the actual award, the court confirmed that. What it didn't do is enforce that award as to the relief that the union is seeking here, which is as to the second termination.
So presumably, if either a subsequent arbitration or the proceedings in this court were resolved adversely to your client would have to reinstate him pursuant to the original award.
You're saying if an arbitrator or this court were to determine that he was improperly discharged?
The firing for lying either doesn't go to the arbitrator or it goes to the arbitrator who resolves it against you, then the first confirmation, which is basically effectively being stayed by the second firing, that first arbitral award has been confirmed and you would have to abide by it at that point.
Well, I would put it differently, Your Honor. I would say that we did abide by the first arbitration order. We onboarded him. We did the physical. He came to the plant. He acknowledges all of this in his declaration that he filed with the complaint. So we would say we did comply with that first arbitration award. What you're describing would be enforcement of the second arbitration award. That if this went to arbitration were to win,
I do understand.
There'd be a new award that we would comply with. But that, you know, the relief they're seeking is not just reinstatement. They're also seeking reinstatement with back pay, with interest. For the second firing. So there are a whole host of issues that remain to be resolved, and that's sort of the meat of this. It's not just the termination. It's all these other issues as well that, are, in our view, have to go to the arbitrator.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Hayes, you've reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal, if there's anything you would like to add.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few things. On the issue of arbitrability that counsel's referring to, we would just submit this is a circular issue and brings us right back to the same question that's at the heart of this case, which is whether the arbitrator made the decision on the issue on the same issue or not. And that's why both sides spend all of their time arguing about what issue was decided.
Perhaps you can help me understand why we should accept your argument that he did. I mean, he is presented with a question of firing based on harassment. Now, if at the time the arbitration was commenced, they had evidence that he lied, they could have said, and lying also supported firing. But they didn't do that because it was only in the course of the arbitration that your client admitted that he lied. So how did the firing for lying become a question before the arbitrator? I would like to understand why we should conclude that.
There are two important answers to that, Your Honor. One is that the parties fixed the issue not as what the district court characterized it as just whether the harassment, the original conduct, the harassment justified termination. That was not the issue before the arbitrator. Instead, it was whether there was just cause for termination. And as we argue in our briefs, just cause encompasses many different related, you might call, side issues.
And that can shift in the course of an arbitration, or it has to be what the justification they provide when they answer the call for arbitration?
Because the issue was just cause, Your Honor, it was appropriate for both sides to make arguments about the lying and for the arbitrator
how
to consider
to
the
lying. Your colleague's argument that dishonesty and lying were not mentioned at the third stage and that therefore that issue could not have been used as a basis for termination?
What matters, Your Honor, is what issue was before the arbitrator and what the arbitrator decided. And that's why the union didn't, you know, object to Ford eliciting testimony and presenting evidence on the lying in front of the arbitrator and making arguments to the arbitrator. The union viewed it as fair game because that's part of a just cause analysis. We made our arguments on either side, and the arbitrator made his decision based in part on that line.
Do we have in the record any parts of the argument where either the company argued, and by the way, firing for lying would have been just cause, or where you argue in response, his admission of lying would not be just cause for firing him? Do we have any argument by either side to suggest that?
Your Honor, in our brief, we have a citation to the company's argument in its post-hearing brief, calling the lying an infraction.
Yes, I saw that.
Okay. That's a clear reference to the merits of just cause. It's not a reference to credibility. It's not even a reference to just the remedy.
Do you respond to it as a suggestion that that couldn't be an infraction warranting termination?
Did the union respond to it? Was that your question? The parties both submit their briefs to the arbitrator at the same time, so we don't have a chance to respond explicitly to arguments either side.
On the one hand, I understand where today it's very much in your client's interest or in the union's interest to argue that this was raised. But I am concerned about a ruling that would expose you to last-minute claims of conduct warranting termination that you actually never had a chance to deal with in the hearing or in your brief, especially with simultaneous submissions. I'm concerned about going too far in that direction. Why shouldn't that be a concern for this case?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's a concern generally. The union would agree with that. We want due process for anybody who's fired, of course. The reason that isn't an issue here is that the issue of lying was dealt with in front of the arbitrator, you know, in terms of eliciting testimony, which means the other side had the ability to redirect or present their own evidence on the issue, and because the arbitrator himself referred to that issue. This isn't a situation where something came out of the blue and the arbitrator, sua sponte, raised an issue that neither side had dealt with. It was very much already on the table. That's why we believe there is no material factual difference here.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.